This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
I've said it once. I've said it 1,000 times. Fade UConn at your own risk. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Michael Lombardi, although he will be back tomorrow, I'm sure, with a great tan. Nobody better to keep the seat warm than our guy Will Hill, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. And Will, I know you don't get the middle with the +7 coming home yesterday, but congrats on cashing some UConn futures. What a runaway from the Huskies yet again.
Yeah, and are we sure Lombardi's back tomorrow? What if I have like a great show and it's a little Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe situation?
Wally Pipped. He's getting Wally Pipped on the show with his own name.
Yeah, it's look, last night was sort of representative of the whole tournament, kind of like we talked about with the women's game, where it's just UConn pulls away. It's funny. It looked like Purdue was up to the task early, first 4 minute timeout, 8 minute timeout. They were trading punches and like, all right, we might be in for a good one here. Edie looked comfortable. Edie was scoring. I just think Edie got tired. And you know, it's funny, it was 23 all with like 6.5 minutes left in the half, which was the same score when UConn went on that famous 30-0 run, 23 all. In 23 all, 6 or 7 minutes left in the half, like 6.5 minutes left. Edie didn't score the rest of the half. I just think he got tired. Once UConn went to the locker room up six, you just kind of felt, hey, UConn's going to pull away here. And once they got to double digits, it was just a matter of would Purdue, you hit some threes to get a backdoor. The stat of the game, really, one made three-pointer, 1 of 7 from three. I kind of thought Purdue could be competitive because, hey, they'll clean up the glass. They're a good rebounding team. 14 offensive rebounds for UConn. UConn's wings were just much more athletic than Purdue's. They didn't have to double Edie. It really shut down the rest of the team. And UConn does what they've done the past 2 years. It's funny. They trailed at halftime against Iona in their first game last year. And Hurley had not won a tournament game at UConn. There was a little pressure on him. Like, hey, is this guy a big-time coach? And they dominated Iona the second half, and they've killed everybody in their sights since. So if you're sitting there on Iona saying, hey, we led this team at halftime last year, I mean, nobody else has done it. Nobody's put a glove on them. It runs counter to everything we think of this tournament where, hey, all these games are close. Somebody, you know, even if you're going to win, you're going to have a fight. You're going to have a test at some point. UConn hasn't been tested. Nobody touched them. This is one of the all-time great tournament runs. I mean, sit here and try to put it in perspective, but it's an all-time great run. What was your take on the game? Were you kind of bored by it second half? Or were you just happy to cash your future? What did you think of it?
I think, like, especially early on, like you, it was a closely contested game. And I was hopeful and optimistic that maybe it would carry over. But like we've seen all too much with UConn this season is that, and particularly in the tournament, that it can be close early and they can be a little bit slow starting. And then they just find a way to kick another gear. And it could come in a 1 minute long stretch. It could come over the course of a half. It just depends. But no matter what it is, they're going to find a way to win. And you talk about the dominance of this stretch since the start of last year's tournament. 12-0 straight up and against the spread. Their closest win they have had is by 13 points, average margin of victory, over 23 points per game. What they have done is remarkable. Now they're the first back-to-back champion since Florida did it in 07. You talked about those threes. Their season average, 8 makes and 20 attempts per game for Purdue. You said it. They had 1 on 7 attempts, just outstanding guard play, perimeter defense from UConn, just making life hard on Purdue in so many different ways, but making, from an appearance standpoint, it looked easy, but making it hard on them. And then also from an assist standpoint for Purdue, they average assists on 65% of their field goals. They had more turnovers than assists last night. So it just felt like another one of those games, Will, where we try to talk ourselves into an underdog and we try to talk ourselves into it's going to be a close game. These are the top two teams largely for the entirety of the year in college basketball. But why even bother? Because as Dan Hurley said, probably better than anybody else, we won again by a lot.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't think UConn like played all that great. I mean, I think they shot 27% from three. They got a little sloppy in garbage time where they had some turnovers and it could have easily won by 20 something. There was not even in terms of the spread, was there really any drama? You thought maybe for a second, who knows, you go on a little run and get it to where, hey, you can hit a three to like maybe push the spread, but it was the win was never really in doubt for most of the game. The cover was never really in doubt. Once UConn got to 10, it's like, all right, Purdue just doesn't have the team to outscore UConn. Like, UConn's not blowing the 10-point lead to anybody. So kind of a boring tournament. I mean, let's be honest. It was kind of a boring tournament. I think back of this tournament, I'll think of that Friday afternoon where Yale has the crazy finish in the upset against Auburn, almost simultaneous with the Florida-Colorado buzzer beater, almost buzzer beater. Other than that, though, a lot of blowouts, a lot of chalk. Team we thought was going to win, one. You know, Purdue stomped their way to this title game. UConn stomped their way to the title game, and then UConn wins and wins going away. So kind of a dud in terms of the tournament. I don't know. Did you feel the same way? Or was a little bit of a letdown?
A little bit. And I'll be curious to see what the TV ratings are, because yesterday we had that big news, the reaction to the tournament ratings in the final for the women's basketball side, and it was 18.7 million, which set a record for not only the women's game. I mean, the improvement of viewership from last year was up 85% from 2 years ago. The last time South Carolina won, it was up 285%. And last year's men's championship, when UConn played San Diego State, was around 14.1, 14.2. So I'm curious, in another game where, yes, obviously the team on the other side is the one that you want to see a whole lot more than last year with San Diego State, it still ended up being kind of a dud of a game. So from average viewership and people dipping out and probably on the East Coast going to sleep early, I wonder if this is the first time that the women's game might actually have a better rating than the men's.
Yeah, good point. And I wonder if does the UConn's dominance turn people off? Like, oh, they're going to win again. You got kind of bored of it. I mean, people, I don't know if they're at that level where people are rooting against them and they keep the TV on. But like you said, when the result's in doubt and you're starting the game 9:25, yeah. Second half started, had to be what, 11 o'clock. It's just once UConn goes up 10, 12 points and you're getting close to midnight, people on the East Coast, they got to wake up the next morning. Unless you bet the game, unless you're, you know, a diehard UConn fan, you say, all right, UConn's going to win. I'm sure a lot of TV sets went off right around that time. So this is, I'm sure the attention now will turn, hey, can Kentucky lure Hurley away? I don't see that happening. I'm curious how you feel. I'm sure they'll come with sort of a blank check and say, hey, how much do you want? What can we do? I don't know. Would Hurley do that? You can win as much as he's won in Connecticut. They love him here. He's built up some equity. I don't know that he'd jump ship and jump into that hotbed where there's going to be a lot of pressure. And hey, there's no equity built up if you take the Kentucky job and you lose in the Sweet 16 next year. He would say, why are we paying this guy all this money? So I would think he would stay put. I would think UConn gives him a nice little pay raise. And I think he stayed put. That's something you'd agree with?
I would. I think he stays there. And he, by the way, only got to celebrate the win last night for so long before he was asked about it in his postgame press conference. Here's Hurley's response.
Yeah. I don't think that's a concern. You know, my wife, you should have her answer that. Yeah.
We can maybe arrange a press conference for Mrs. Hurley in the morning. Congratulations, coach.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she'll answer that question better than I can.
So my thing with this is, Will, that even though obviously Kentucky is such a renowned program, a blue blood, I mean, UConn, from a program standpoint, the last quarter century has kind of been the team. And they're like a modern day blue blood now. They have turned things into their favor. And he's a Jersey guy. He loves the area. UConn, from what they've done on the men's and women's side for basketball in this small little town, has been remarkable. If I'm him, like, why not stay put, just get more money to stay where you are and keep having success? Because he did it this year, even with three of their best players leaving last season.
Yeah, for sure. And you don't look at Kentucky and say, well, I have to go to Kentucky because I can't win here. I have to go there to win. I mean, this is six titles in 25 years for UConn. And I'll be honest, once Calhoun left, I mean, have you ever been to Storrs, Connecticut? I don't know if you have. Anyone that's been there, you go there and you think, wow, this is the hotbed. This is the premier program, the premier school in college basketball. It's really incredible what Calhoun did. Once he left, they won that title with Ollie. But after that, there was a drop off. I was like, I don't know if they'll ever get it back to what it was. You know, they were in that dinky American conference where it's like, man, they had some rough years, some really lean years. So I was really, I remember talking with some buddies like, man, I don't know if we ever see them win again. I don't know if we ever see them get to the top again, just because it's such a tough place to recruit. And with Calhoun gone, who knows? Calhoun never won back-to-back. This is back-to-back, 12 in a row. So he's gotten to where Calhoun took the program, maybe even higher. So incredible job, just an absolutely incredible job. And look, six titles in 25 years, that's pretty damn good. It's not like you have to go move your family and take a little more money. He's got plenty of money. He's going to get plenty of money. So my bet would be he stays put. We've already seen, I think, Nate Oates go on the record and say, hey, I'm staying put. So it's not like people look at Kentucky and say, oh, I have to take that job. We've already seen people turn that job down in the last 24 hours. So it'll be interesting.
Some of these other college basketball coaches need to do whatever it takes to intercept Dan Hurley's suitcase from Phoenix back to Connecticut so that they can get that Magic Dragon underwear out of there because it continues to win throughout the tournament. That's one of like the funniest and my favorite storylines of the tournament. I think it's hysterical. By the way, as we look ahead to next year's national championship odds, could we get a three-peat with the UConn Huskies? Huskies. They're the second shot on the board. Duke is the favorite, 10-1. UConn there at 12-1, followed by Kansas and North Carolina, 14-1. The only team to three-peat in the men's game is UCLA when they went through that crazy stretch of winning seven straight under John Wooden in the 60s and 70s. Neither Florida nor Duke, who have gone back-to-back since, even made it to the second weekend of the tournament that following third year. Florida missed the tournament altogether and Duke lost in the round of 32. Does that give you any reason for hesitation about this UConn team looking ahead to next year, or should we expect what we have already seen under Dan Hurley?
I have no idea. I don't know what the team's going to look like. You figure Kling goes to the pro. Castle, whenever he decides to go to the pro, I think he'll be a good pro. What's the team look like, and you know, who do you replace in terms of the transfer portal? Obviously, he's got it rolling here, so if you want to take it, I mean, it's a long time to tie up your money, but I'd like to see first who declares, who doesn't. I'm sure we'll see pretty quickly a few of these guys, but if you can bring most of the team back, I mean, I get it at 12-1. It's just, I want to know what team I'm betting on before I make that bet.
The last national champion to replace two lottery picks was Duke in 2015, and that Blue Devils team went to the Sweet 16. The Huskies do have two prospects ranked in the ESPN Top 100 coming to stores next season, Ahmad Noel and Isaiah Abraham. So we'll see what ends up playing out there again. 12-1, the number looking forward. We're going to hit the break. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, why this team might plan to sit their top three draft pick. The Chargers appear to think the sky is the limit for their offense, Will. Plus, is Merrill Hodge right or wrong when it comes to Drake May? He says he could get some people fired. We'll discuss that and more coming up in News or Noise. Stay with us right here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And Will Hill in for Michael today as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Remember, for a limited time, we at VSiN are offering 2 weeks for free to see our exclusive betting splits page when you go to vsin.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though, right now, because, again, this is a limited time offer. vsin.com/splits and claim your free 2 week access to VSiN betting splits. Live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, we are back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, after UConn doubles down and goes back-to-back, winning the national championship last night against Purdue. And somebody who is not afraid to lay the number with UConn joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Tom Giles hosts the weekly spread on NBC Sports Boston, dialed into all things Northeast sports. Welcome in, Tom, and congrats on the dub last night. How about those freaking UConn Huskies that have just been dominant every single tournament game since the start of last year's dance?
Yeah. And, you know, the Northeast is very interesting in the way that we kind of treat college sports. It's basically like if you're from Connecticut or you went to UConn, you're a UConn fan. Otherwise, you know, we all just put up with each other and your respective teams. It's weird. It's not like, hey, it's a New England thing. We all rally around it. But it's just amazing to see what they've done. And it's absolutely incredible that, you know, Dan Hurley has become, in my opinion, the best coach in college basketball. And I don't think there's anyone even close in the conversation.
Tom, if I made you bet over under for how many games the Celtics lose in the Eastern Conference playoffs, with how much of a mess the Bucks are, you got teams like the Magic and the Pacers who aren't on that level. If I put it at, say, 5.5, would you go over or under? Because it seems pretty set up here for Boston to walk to the finals at least.
Yeah, I guess that's why you probably want to lean under in that situation. But, you know, you look at last year, they went 6 games against Atlanta, which they really didn't have any business doing that. It took them 7 games to get through Philadelphia. So I think they're still capable at times of kind of stubbing their toe a little bit. But if you maybe choose, I'd probably go under in this situation, thinking they go 5 games in the first round and maybe 6 in each of the two respective rounds.
Celtics a -140 favorite to win the Eastern Conference. And I feel like the big conversation around the Eastern Conference is just who's going to give the Celtics the biggest test? Like, who's going to be the one team that maybe could be their challenger? Milwaukee seems to be falling apart right now. And I know those two are going head to head tonight. But who do you think would be the biggest challenger in the East to Boston?
It's a really interesting question, because the other thing that's kind of, you look around and they could be seeing Miami or Philadelphia as their first round opponent. And you know, I think there's still a lot of Celtics fans look at it and Miami as just being kind of a mental hurdle that they have to get past. I mean, clearly on paper, they're a better team than the Miami Heat, but Eric Spoelstra, when he gets to the postseason, Jimmy Butler, they just kind of take it up to another level. So their first round matchup's not going to be a cakewalk by any means if they end up playing the Heat or even Philadelphia, who, you know, had one of the best records in the NBA before Joel Embiid got hurt. So now he's coming back, and they're not your typical 7 or 8 seed either. So those two teams, I think, could at least, I don't know if they necessarily give them a series, but they're not going to be a rollovers or walkovers in terms of, you know, the Eastern Conference. And then I think everyone else just feels like they're kind of the same. It should be Milwaukee, but Milwaukee just, they still can't figure out how to play defense. And I don't know why you would be that afraid of Milwaukee at this point.
Tom, switching gears to football, it's funny to look at the Patriots after all of their years, decades of dominance, look at the season win total and see a 4.5 is a startling number. But do you have any sense here for the draft? What order these quarterbacks are going to go? And is there a consensus in the Boston area in terms of who they want as the Patriots' next quarterback?
We in the Boston area have not been in this position for a very long time when it comes to the draft. So it's been, I think, quite the oversaturation of draft talk, like all day, every day for months. And we still got a couple more weeks to go. There are some fans out there that I think would like to see them actually trade out of the pick because they need a left tackle. They need a wide receiver. They have so many needs that if you could, you know, stockpile 3 or maybe even 4 first round picks for that number 3 overall pick. I know some fans want to go in that direction. I think that you have to take the quarterback while you're there at 3. And it feels to me like there's growing momentum for Drake May. You saw JJ McCarthy, maybe his name kind of move up and you're hearing some of that. But in my opinion, I feel like the JJ McCarthy rumors are almost to just say, hey, we're open for business here. If you thought that you were going to trade up to get JJ McCarthy at 4, we might take him at 3. So it's just, I think you're at that point in the draft season where you're hearing a little bit of everything, but if it's me, I think it's Drake May at number 3, and I think that's the direction that they're going
to
go.
Yeah, we love to say it's lying season, right? Drake May, a -135 favorite to go number 3 overall, followed by Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, +330. And what have you made of some of the comments that have been going viral multiple times now from Merrill Hodge and his thoughts on Drake May compared with, like, your personal evaluation and what you've heard from people around the building and that are in the know with the Patriots and what they're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Merrill Hodge, he's been on a couple over the years, but, you know, one of the other things, too, is it's, you know, if you're playing the numbers game, it's more likely than not that a first-round quarterback is going to fail. That's just how it's gone historically, and even in the top 5. So, you know, he might be right when it all comes down, but at the same time, I actually like what you said, Stormy, in the last segment, where if you're Gerard Mayo or Elliot Wolf in this situation, who's basically your de facto GM who hasn't necessarily been given the full-time title, can you afford to pass on the number 3 quarterback? Can you afford to pass on Drake May? You know, maybe he can get you fired if he's not good enough 3 or 4 years from now, but if you also pass on him and someone else takes him and he turns out to be that Josh Allen or that premier quarterback, then can you really live with that as well? So they're in a tough spot, and that's why I think that you have to take the quarterback. You have to take the risk there rather than, you know, trading back and hoping that everything else works out. Because even then, those draft picks are not necessarily locks to land.
Tom, we are, I think, less than an hour away from the home opener at Fenway. Red Sox actually played pretty well, 7-3 on the West Coast. They get Burns today in Baltimore. Do you have a play in this game, and what is the temperature here with the Red Sox, the Red Sox fans? Are they into this team? Do they believe it all?
The temperature is at like an all-time high right now for what I think it might be for the month of April in this season, because people are loving it. They're 7-3. It's like 60 degrees here. Like, this is, it's sunny. Like, this is the perfect day for opening day. Everyone's optimistic, but I think that a lot of Red Sox fans general casual Red Sox fans are pretty realistic about this team. And I don't think anyone's expecting to go to the playoffs. I know that a lot of fans are still mad about what they did this offseason, which was not much at all. And we're kind of seeing the direction they're going in now, locking up some of their younger guys to those team-friendly deals like Brian Bello and Rafael Sedana. So they're kind of going that direction. But I think people are into it. Here's the thing, though, for today. They got Brian Bello on the mound. You look at his splits, and this is – it's out there. There's a lot of people that have shared this information. But last year, you know, his ERA in night games was somewhere around 3. His ERA in day games last year, and it was 10 starts in day games, was up near 7. So he really struggled for whatever reason pitching during the day. And here he is for the home opener going up against Baltimore. I think the Baltimore team total over 4.5. You're looking at plus 105 right around there. So that's what I've got my eye on. The only thing that's working against you there is maybe a little bit of wind coming in from right field.
Okay. Or Orioles -130 favorite out there in Fenway. The Red Sox plus 110 total for the game 8. And we talked about the Celtics earlier, big picture, but they are in action coming up later today against the Bucks. 2.5 point favorite in that game. Is there anything that you're looking at from a betting approach there?
So the Celtics in general, since they've locked up the number one overall seed in the NBA, for me, the thing that's been most consistent to look at is, you know, who's in, who's out of the lineup. And if they're missing a point guard, whether it's Derek White, Drew Holiday, they're missing a couple guys. Peyton Pritchard has been just a machine. He's going to get his minutes. He's going to play with the second unit. If Joe Mazzulla decides we don't need to win this game, because they don't need to win any of these games, if he just decides he's going to sit all the starters in the fourth quarter, Peyton Pritchard will get a ton of minutes. And he had 10.6 assists the other night just in the fourth quarter, 20 points, 8 assists in that game. His numbers have been right around 11.5 for points. His assists have been around 4.5, maybe 5.5. But that's a player you're going to want to look at. The only thing is that it looks like the Celtics are going to be, it maybe one of their big guys is going to be out, maybe both big guys, but I don't really see how that would kind of help Peyton Pritchard. So this might be the one time you want to just lay off it. However, I'd keep an eye on Peyton Pritchard over the last 3 games as well, especially the season finale where he's due to go off for about 30 points.
Great insight, Tom. We so appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tom Giles. Thanks, Tom. Make sure you follow him on X at Tom Giles NBCS. And it's Giles with a G, by the way, because I, you know, sometimes you get confused with those G's. Is it a hard G or is it not? But there you
do
go.
You?
Yeah, maybe it's just me. Can this be my blonde moment of the day? Let me live. Also host of The Weekly Spread on NBC Sports Boston. Appreciate his time. We're going to hit the break here when we come back. Let's talk a little more draft, because DraftKings continues to put up more and more prop markets as it pertains to the action coming up at the end of this month. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dan Hurley said it best, we won by a lot again. That being the UConn Huskies, who win back-to-back national titles, the first team to do so since Florida in 07. As we welcome you into hour 2 of the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network, this show, as always, presented by DraftKings. I'm Stormy Bonantoni alongside Will Hill, in for Michael Lombardi today, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can also catch him as a member of the Gambling Group Chat on Fox Sports Bear Bets podcast with Chris Felica. And you cashed a number of futures, but I know you're kicking yourself a little bit for the Purdue +7 bet after what we saw in the second half last night.
Yeah, always kicking myself. I'm just never happy. Wish I bet more, wish I bet less, wish I'd bet at all. I mean, just it's part of the life of being a bettor. And Tony, we sat here and we talked about the under too. I was like, that's probably my favorite way is to play this under, but I didn't get the best of the number. I was actually on air when that Final Four game ended against Bama. So it went like open 148.5. It was gone right away. Then I was like, oh, I don't want to play 146. I don't want to play 145. And it closed, I don't even know where it closed, 143 or
143.
Something.
143.
Going under. Yeah. And it wasn't even close. I mean, I guess there was a little tension at the end where if they kept fouling, maybe you could get there. But those games that are 15, 20 point games, they just usually kind of die. There's no fouling at the end where you get the, you know, the BS 12 or 15 points. So the under was it was a dead nut under. Both teams played slow, played through the post. And hey, when you're only gonna make 1-3 and you're only gonna shoot 1-7 from 3, yeah, it's hard to go over. So Look, I thought Purdue would be more competitive. I thought they'd take care of the glass more. 14 offensive rebounds for UConn. UConn is just an absolute freight train of a team, of a program. They are just, they were more athletic on the wings. They look, Edie got his, but Edie, they didn't have to double him, so that left the 3-point shooters covered. And UConn's 1-4 was just much better than Purdue's 1-4. And give him credit. I know, Stuckey, who I've had on my podcast, he's been on this network a lot. Works for Action Network. He was talking about UConn. He kind of reminded him. He said of 2019 LSU, where sometimes there's a team that the numbers just can never catch up to. You can never make the number high enough. As efficient as these numbers are, they're not perfect, and these numbers could just never catch up to UConn. They not only cover every game, but they cover every game by such a wide margin where they basically just always double the spread. LSU was like that. This UConn team's like that. So congrats to UConn. This is one of the all-time great runs when you go back to last year, 12 in a row against the spread. And anyone that just says, hey, I'm going to keep betting UConn and roll it over, man, you had a hell of a time here the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, this spread has been inflated every step of the way.
Yeah.
KenPom, we talked about it yesterday on the show, had this game 3. It was moving around between 6.5 up to 7.5. No matter what you put on this team, it doesn't matter because they're going to win by double digits. In fact, dating back to the start of last year's tournament, they're going to win by at least 13. The average margin of victory was like 23 points per game. It's just, it's insane what they've been able to do week in and week out of this tournament. Every single game, they've been dominant. And even when it looks like for however brief the sliver of moment is in time is that you're going to have a competitive game like we saw in Alabama where, you know, it's a tie game with 12 minutes to go, doesn't matter because they're going to find a way to pull away. And yep. Dan Hurley talked after the game yesterday about the game plan that they put together to defend Edie and this Purdue Boilermaker squad.
Just the game plan and Luke, Luke for a day and a half prep, to have us as ready as he did defensively for that game was just impressive. We obviously, we didn't want to give up threes. We didn't care if Zach, took 25, 28 shots to get 30, 35 points. This whole game plan was like no Smith, no Lawyer, no Gillis, no Jones. Keep that collective group under 18, 20 points as a group. They had no chance to win.
The Luke he's referring to, by the way, Luke Murray, assistant coach, son of Bill Murray, who is out there in attendance at the game. Edie ended up getting more than 30, 35. He had 37 and 10 in the game. But to his point about not wanting to give up threes, they didn't. Purdue, a team that averages making 8 per game and 20 attempts per game, had just 1 of 7 from 3-point range. Their assists, they had more turnovers than assists in this game. It was just, they did a masterful job defending the Boilermakers. The one question I do have to you, because we didn't talk about this in hour one, most outstanding player ends up going to their All-American guard, Tristan Newton. Cash is plus 425. We talked a lot about it could really go to any of these UConn guys. All 5 of their starters ended up in double figures. He just had the most of the bunch with 27 assists, 5 rebounds. But because this is a tournament award and Edie was awesome every single game, did this kind of feel like this was one where the guy from the losing team maybe should have won most outstanding player? Because it's not most valuable player, right? It's most outstanding for a reason. And he was awesome every game of the tournament.
Could you make a reasonable case for that? Absolutely. We don't do that anymore. I think of the 2015 NBA Finals when LeBron was basically just like a walking triple-double. Irving was hurt, Love was hurt, and he carried them somehow to a 6th game. He was by far, I thought, the best player in that series, and he got a couple votes, but he didn't win. We don't do that anymore. There's no more Chuck Halley's winning Super Bowl MVP of a losing team or Jerry West losing player on an NBA Finals team winning MVP. It's just, that's not our culture anymore. That's not our society. We just, I don't know, for whatever reason.
But should it be? Like, is that a conversation we should be having?
I remember thinking LeBron should have gotten it. So I don't know if I would have voted Edie. I thought he got tired last night. I thought, we talked about that stretch when it was 23-all, which was the infamous score against Illinois when UConn went on that crazy 30-0 run. 23-all, UConn, Purdue. Purdue's in decent shape. 6.5 minutes left in the half. And Edie didn't score the rest of the half. And UConn got up by 6. It just you could have made a case for giving it to him. I really didn't think it was there was a reasonable chance that that Edie was going to get it on a losing team. Give credit to the Bear. Chris Felica came on my podcast Sunday night, Monday, and said, hey, if I had to bet someone for most outstanding player, he'd bet Newton. I don't remember if he actually went through with that bet, but that was a good call by him. It was a bad call by me, too, thinking Klingon going against Edie was going to get his because he just, he got shut down. He only had 11 points. His box score wasn't that great, and Edie got his points, too. So one thing I did want to go back to, though, which I think is interesting, I was on a day or two after the selection, And one of my big things was like, the committee did a terrible job. How can you put Virginia in? How can you leave these Big East teams in? Leave these Big East teams out. Big East only got three teams. Mm. UConn lost seven games last year in the Big East, and they lost two games this year in the Big East. Seton Hall beat them, and Creighton beat them. St. John's took them to the wire basically three times. We should have probably had more than three Big East teams, because if there are teams in that conference that can beat UConn, you know what? This is a pretty good conference. They clearly have by far the best team in the Big East. They probably deserve more than three teams this conference.
It's a great point. And Will, I know this is a terrible comparison, but it's the one that comes to mind to me, how San Diego State went on that awesome run last year to make a national championship. I think the Mountain West got a ton of respect this year, and they got a bunch of teams in. And I think this tournament, after seeing the Big East get dogged essentially the way they did, and these teams that were on the cusp being held out, that we're going to see that transition next year in the Big East. Will get way more teams in, especially after you see Seton Hall go out and win the NIT as well. So you have two national champions, right, that win.
And St. John's had the lead against UConn in the second half of both of the regular season games. Remember that Friday night, Friday or like early evening, late afternoon game in the Big East tournament, right? It was like 90-85 final. St. John's wasn't going to win, but they were, you know, they went toe to toe. Like a lot of these teams in this tournament couldn't do that. I know you don't, you know, we don't give credit for losing, but, and they went 0-3 against UConn, but they played three really competitive games. I think, you know, committee did not do a good job. And if they had a do-over, you know, if you had a different committee, you have to give a little more respect to the Big East when you look at how dominant UConn was. And boy, it's crazy to think UConn has lost 9 conference games the last 2 years. They get to these NCAA tournaments and nobody can put a glove on them. It's really remarkable.
It was an interesting comparison too this year with the men's and women's tournament, because you see, it doesn't always happen this way, right? Where the most dominant team, the best team in the regular season, ends up winning it all. But we saw that on both sides with UConn and South Carolina. UConn finishing the year with the nation's best scoring margin, most efficient offense in the country, top 5 defense, and they go all the way. And I still, if you are Bruce Pearl and Auburn, how much are you just livid at the way you ended your season round one against Yale and don't even give yourself a chance to go toe-to-toe with UConn and make that side of the bracket hard for them, because it basically ended up feeling like a walk in the park with them to the Final Four?
Yeah, and look, they lost to Yale, and Yale got buried by your San Diego State team, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered. And it's funny, we talked about after the bracket came out, this is a gauntlet for UConn. UConn got a raw deal, and nobody came within 13, 15 points of them. I think, what was it, 15 points was last night, their closest game.
Yeah.
I know Northwestern in some garbage time got close to like 17, but not only do they win, not only that, they cover, none of these covers are even doubt. You figure the cover would at least be in doubt, where, you know, I guess Bama was on Saturday night, but for the most part, man, they are just trucking these teams.
Unbelievable. Looking ahead to next year, though, now we gave you the stat earlier about the only team to three-peat in the men's game being UCLA when they won 7 straight under John Wooden in the 60s and 70s. So this is something that does not happen in the men's tournament. But UConn is the second shot on the board to do it next year. Duke is a 10-1 favorite. Kansas and North Carolina both 14-1. I know it's way too early to even have this discussion. We don't know what's going to happen in the transfer portal. We don't know who's coming back. We don't know what these prospects are going to be like. But on paper, belief in Dan Hurley and the UConn Huskies, it's hard not to have it.
It is, but they're probably going to lose Kling. I mean, they're almost certainly going to lose Kling, and they're almost certainly going to lose Castle, who I think will be a good NBA player, probably better than Kling, too. Is that, like, as dominant as Klingon is in the pros, I don't know if he's got the foot speed. I don't know if he can shoot enough to be an effective NBA player with the way that game is all about spacing and everything. Caravan, maybe he's a second rounder, so maybe he comes back. There's some of these guys that are on the fringe, so we'll see. I wouldn't be rushing to take 12-1 unless I start to see, hey, that's one of those things where you can monitor the news and start to get a feel for who's coming back and who's not. And maybe, you know, the book doesn't react in time. And you can, if you're hell bent on betting UConn and you want a piece of it, maybe you just, you wait and see who they're getting, who they're losing, because there's just so many moving parts here.
Like, for me, I don't know what your approach necessarily is to markets like this, but unless I'm the fan of a team, I'm not betting anything this early. There's no reason to, unless you know something that a team's going to land this amazing guy and you see a big number right now. There's just no reason to at this point.
Or if you jumped on Arkansas when Calipari was going there, you figure, hey, Calipari basically puts a top 5-10 team anywhere, and you can got the 70-1. I know it's 40-1. That's you're beating the book to the punch. I get that, but other than that, it's especially, you know, 12-1. It's okay. I'm not pushing
that. Will, we talked about that yesterday, like how that was one of those unique situations where there was no leak Like, nobody heard anything to my knowledge. Imagine having that knowledge in your back pocket.
Right.
Ooh. Although, Cal teams don't seem to get out of the first round of the tournament anyway, so who sees? We're going to hit the break here when we come back. We've got a little this or that. A would you rather situation, if you will, in the betting markets. We'll be right back. Will loves my games. For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. All sports, take advantage. This is a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN betting splits. Rolling along here on the Lombardi line. Stormy Bonantoni and Will Hill with you. Will, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can download wherever you get your podcast, which I know you had an episode out earlier this week previewing the national championship. When's the next one coming, Will?
Tomorrow, the great Matt Eumanns will be on. Ooh. Break down the Masters, go over a little NFL draft. So, yeah, excited.
Perfect. And we will get into a little NFL draft conversation and Masters talk here in a bit. But I was just looking at a clip on Twitter during the commercial break of Dan Hurley on the Pat McAfee show talking about all the things and the talk about Cal moving on from Kentucky, going to Arkansas, and with that being an opening and stuff. And he said that his phone broke on Saturday. So immediately when like all of this news was starting to trickle out on Sunday, like he didn't even know that that was a thing right away because nobody could call him. His agent couldn't call him. Nobody could text him or anything like that. And so the only time that he really knew about it was when he like saw on TV and was talking to people in person. So that's definitely a very unique scenario. And after the game, he said his agent probably hated that he even made any answer whatsoever, but he was already looking ahead to next year and where the East region's going to come out of in the Final Four and a lot of places that UConn would have favorable fan attendance.
Yeah, and so next year it's the East Regional. Wow, he's already looking ahead to that. I did see the quote after the game where somebody asked him how he's going to celebrate, and he said him and his wife are going to sit on the hotel floor and get hammered. So that's always
nice. My kind of guy, man after my own heart. We do have a little fun game here, Will, and I know that this is both your favorite and least favorite thing to do when you're on shows with me every single day.
You do this at home.
I don't. No, I save it for television.
Chicken or fish? What's for dinner? Door A or door B? Everything's a game with you. I'm ready to play.
So here's the thing. So actually, that is a great point because I kind of am like that. I am very indecisive. I'm not a good decision maker in my day-to-day life, especially when it comes to food. So I am a narrower downer. So I give like two options or three. Maybe we're finding something out about me. I need to go to therapy to analyze this a little bit deeper. But that is the game that we're going to play here called This or That. And it's an NBA playoffs and draft edition. So I'm going to give you two props that are worth essentially the same value. One that is NBA related, one that is NFL draft related. And you tell me, would you rather bet one or the other? Sound good?
I guess. Sure.
You see, come on, get on board, man. Starting
Let's do it.
With
no, I'm excited. Let's go.
Steph Curry to win NBA clutch player. -160 or Dallas Turner to be the first defensive player off the board, -170. Equal value.
I'll go with Curry. I think people like Curry. It's a way to give him an award. I will go. I'll go with Curry here. I don't feel comfortable with any of the draft info. I don't remember if this was on the air or off the air. We were talking about how last year there was like nine different guys that were going to go to. None of them were Stroud, and Stroud and I'm going to. So I don't trust any of the draft info. I'll go with Curry, which I admit, Clutch Player of the Year is a very obscure award, but I'll go with Curry. A tentative vote for Curry.
Okay, next one. Naz Reid, Sixth Man of the Year, -105, or Brock Bowers to be drafted in the top 10. And I know this one is you're dialed up in because we talked all about the Jets and what they might potentially do with that number 10 overall pick.
I'll go with Naz Reid just because I think Monk has missed just enough time at the end of the year, and he's the other candidate here with Sixth Man that it'll go to Reid. I don't know if the Jets don't take Bowers at 10. Like I don't see any of those other teams in the top nine taking Bowers. Just the value of that position, it comes down to, will the Jets take him or not? And we both kind of agree, hey, it could be an offensive lineman. If it's not an offensive lineman, maybe it's one of those receivers if they flip. So I'll go with Naz Reid here.
Which, again, I do think is good to reinforce, because we both agree on that thought process that it's either the Jets at 10 or he's going out of the top 10, that it's going to be a better bet if you do like Brock Bowers to be selected. Instead of taking him top 10, to take him to go to the Jets, or for the Jets to take a tight end would make more sense.
Plus, maybe the Jets say, hey, we like Bowers, but we think we could trade down, get a few more picks, and maybe we still get him at 13 or 14. And if we lose him, we're not, it's not the end of the world for us. So Jets could still get him, but he might not go 10. He might go to the Jets at 13 or 14. Remember, there's not a lot of moving parts with this draft stuff.
Good point. And that price, by the way, around plus 125-ish, depending on what book you're looking at here. Let's go back to big picture NBA. The Denver Nuggets to win the Western Conference, still plus money, plus 155, or over 6.5 wide receivers at plus 140.
Wow, these are good ones. Whoever came up with these, did you come up with these? These
I did not. Credit producer extraordinaire Justin Emery, who's filling in for Elliot, who, by the way, Elliot's coming back tomorrow, and he's going to be a sad Sally because he is a Purdue Boilermaker fan. So we're going to have to make sure that Michael brings the positive energy tomorrow.
Oh, and boy, yeah.
we got to get Elliot in better spirits. But yeah, Justin put these together, so he's crushing it. What do you got? What do you like?
He might even be sadder because Justin's doing a hell of a job. Justin might, Wally Pippen. Yeah.
There we go.
I'll go with the receivers. I think there's enough need, especially with the Bills. I think the Bills pushes this over the top where, you know, some of those Texas guys I've heard, I think the Bear was on my podcast the other day saying he heard the Texas guys go in the first round. Now the Bills need a receiver. There's just so many of these receivers out there. I think we get a seventh. Not that I don't think the Nuggets win, but the Nuggets, they're in a lock to get the one seed. And if you start talking about a two or three seed, they might not have home court in some of these series. So who knows? I do think both happen. I do think both are decent bets. I'll go with the receivers, though.
See, and I know we've joked about it with Michael a lot on this show that, like, oh, everybody loves a receiver. There's going to be 10 wide receivers that go in the first round. And, you know, maybe teams are reaching a little bit. But we have seen that wide receiver talent coming directly from the college level is one of the more translatable, like, skill sets. Like, a lot of these guys that are great in college end up being great in the pros, whereas a lot of other positions, we haven't seen that same translatable skill set. So I like where your head's at in that one. I think the Bills are a great point. Maybe even the Kansas City Chiefs, who weren't expected to, I mean, granted, their wide receiver room has troubles. They add Marquise Brown, but then the whole Rashee Rice thing, maybe you're more likely to take a wide receiver now. Let's stick with the theme of the conferences, though. Boston Celtics. Oh, this is actually to win the NBA championship. So Boston to win it all, which is crazy that we haven't even started the playoffs yet, and they're plus 190 to win an NBA title. Or J.J. McCarthy, draft position over 5.5.
Oh, I think I'll go with
That's a tough one, right?
I'll go Boston. I don't think McCarthy's going over 5.5. I think McCarthy's going under. So by process of elimination, I think I'd be surprised if so we're saying JJ's still going to be there at the sixth pick. I don't see that happening. Again, who knows what information's real and what's not. I'll go with the Celtics just because I do think there's a very good chance. I mean, how is Boston not in the finals? Who keeps them out of the finals? I guess you can say, hey, Lombardi's boy Embiid gets healthy and they knock him out. Maybe the Heat do their thing, but this should be basically a red carpet to the finals for Boston. So I'll go with Boston.
I agree. The road to the finals feels pretty signed, sealed, delivered for Boston, barring injuries. But I mean, I like the Nuggets a lot. Like, I think that they could be in repeat position here. But with JJ, I like that this is put in here, Justin, because we talked about it a lot yesterday. Like, I am not a J.J. McCarthy believer, and I think it is a mistake for him to be a top five selection. So obviously, I'm not going to bet what I think. It's what GMs think, ultimately, and what they're looking for in a lot of quarterback needy teams. But this is an interesting conversation to be had, because we've seen a lot of talk in the past about potential teams reaching for different quarterbacks. Like, if we listened to everything that we heard and believed last year, then Will Levis would have been a first round pick. Malik Willis would have been a top 10 selection, right? So you never really know until draft day. And that's why this is fun to kind of sweat out and learn from. But I do think that JJ is going to go 4 or 5, no matter how much it is just a bizarre concept to me. The Milwaukee Bucks, plus 340 to win the Eastern Conference, although they've lost 6 of their last 7 and seem to be crashing and burning under Doc Rivers.
I'll take
now
the other one.
Malik Nabers to be the first non-quarterback off the board.
Oh, geez. Justin did a hell of a job with these. These are all very good. The Bucks are not winning the
You have to go neighbors because yes. there has been a lot of talk from GMs and scouts that have neighbors as their top wide receiver off the board, right. Not Marvin Harrison Jr., even though, like, obviously his odds are juiced to high heaven, -$5 and above to sure. beat. But I think that if there was a market where you're getting a good plus money price for a guy that a lot of GMs think could be a better pro, I don't hate it.
Plus, there's always a chance of a data entry error. Like, when the Bucks have no chance of making the finals, at least there's a chance that, like, somebody even turns the pick in by mistake with neighbors. Well, the other one is just impossible. I can't see any scenario where the Bucks make the finals. That team stinks. I don't know. I mean, people are probably paying attention to the NCAA tournament. They haven't noticed, but they've been losing every night to these terrible teams. That Doc Rivers experiment, shockingly, has not gone well here.
Well, so it started off a little bit slow, but you're like, okay, any transition period, that makes sense. They started kicking it into gear, and that's when you start getting the believers, like, okay, it's the Celtics and everybody else, but the Bucks are certainly going to be that next team that can really give them some competition. And now it just feels like, no, like, zero trust, zero interest in backing anything Milwaukee. Next on the Lombardi Line. It's time for the first major championship of the PGA Tour season. Names worth a look at Augusta, plus one thing you have to try if you attend this bucket list event. We'll be right back.